The Angsty Christian Podcast is a mature show that deep dives into the problematic aspects of the modern church. Some content might not be suitable for all listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Angsty Christian Podcast. My name is Jake, and fun fact about me this week, I totally just forgot an entire-ass iPad at my job at Disneyland, and so literally we had to go, before this recording, go get my iPad, because it was very important that I did not leave it at work. So, yeah. We went to Disneyland.
We went to Disneyland and we saw a kid dressed up as Sully.
It was so cute. Oh my god.
It was amazing.
I saw a grumpy old man on a scooter. He like literally looked like the guy from Up. Not dressed like him, just looked like him. But then he had a Dalmatian hat on and he just looked so upset.
Wait, I want to be that old man.
Me too, honestly. He's my spirit animal. That was like my spiritual energy right there.
I love that old man from Up with a Dalmatian hat.
Yeah.
Okay, a fun fact about...
Wait, who the fuck are you? First off.
Who am I? Fuck.
Second time. Here we go.
I mean, that's a complicated question, but my name is Bonnie. And a fun fact about me is I like the sequel Star Wars trilogy. I know that's unpopular.
Get the fuck out.
I'm sorry. The Last Jedi was shit, okay? It was bad.
Yes, yes.
But as a whole, maybe it's just because of Poe Dameron, because he's a fine-ass man. But I do enjoy the sequel trilogy a lot.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I liked Rise of Skywalker, and it wasn't perfect, but... it did wrap up the story with Palpatine. And like George Lucas said from the start, he all great three-act shows have like the same bad guy throughout the whole thing. So he had the plan of bringing back Palpatine.
Right. Spoilers. I mean, they were dealing with a lot in terms of like switching up directors and Carrie Fisher dying. Like they were trying to work with a lot of
And not writing a plot for all three movies. If they really set on that trilogy, they should have had an outline for all three instead of saying, okay, pass the torch to the next one. You saw the movie. What do you want to do next?
It wasn't even they saw the movie. They read the script, which means that there was a lot more in the script than would have actually been in the film. Because it cut so much stuff out. So there probably was stuff that they were building off of that wasn't even shown.
Exactly,
which is ridiculous. Yeah. Anyways, did you guys have your titles?
Oh, right. Oh, hey guys. It's me. Your sad dad.
Sad dad.
I'm sad dad. I'm sad dad today. Sad dad energy.
I'm the deconstruction baddie.
Nice. And I'm Daniel, your deconstruction daddy, or whatever you want to call me.
I thought you were just going to end it with, I'm Daniel, and then pause.
I mean, I can. I'm Daniel. And a fun fact about me was recently, so if any of you are on TikTok or on Instagram or whatever, there's this person named Natalie Burdick who writes a lot of really funny songs, and then she's been doing them throughout all of the pandemic, and actually it's her videos that got me addicted to TikTok because they were hilarious and she's hot. So it was kind of, you know, both things.
She's hot.
But she started doing this thing where she was writing an album and she was going off of suggestions on Instagram. And so one day I happened to be on Instagram and saw them and put in like, I think I put in like two or three. And I came back from a workout yesterday and found out that she wrote a song about one of my suggestions. What was my suggestions, you might ask? No one is asking. Butts. So if you go to her Instagram and you look up her songs and you see one that's about butts, you're welcome. It's actually quite a bop.
It really is. An unironic bop, too.
Yeah. It was, like, really good for being about butts. Mm-hmm. And, like, what was it? It was, like, your ass is galactic.
Yeah. Like, galactic ass or something
It was very punny.
Yeah. It was pretty good. And so that is the highlight of my life. I think we're going downhill from here, guys.
Can you die peacefully now?
I can die peacefully.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a pretty good moment because it was really funny. I was like really worried when a friend told me that she wrote a song for my suggestion. I was like, oh fuck, what did I say? Cause it was like weeks ago, but it was Butts. So, you know.
Solid.
Honestly, I think it came after hanging out with Gabe too. So shout out to Gabe. If you don't know Gabe, he draws a lot of butts and they're really funny.
Shout out to Gabe.
Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah, we love you, Gabe.
I don't know you.
Yeah, he did our current podcast artwork, which we're updating our artwork soon.
Yeah. Trust, we're working on it.
Yeah. We got an artist and she's doing some cool stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it'll finally have the complete Triforce of dumbass, dumbass, and dumbass.
Yes. Yeah. We're all fools.
On a fool's journey. Da 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 da. Duh.
All right, so anyways, how are you guys doing?
I don't know.
That was a really funny noise. I don't know how to feel about that.
Should I just do like a toad voice for the rest of the podcast?
Please don't.
Are you sure?
I am very sure.
Okay.
Are we going to continue with our Mario fan fiction?
Yeah, actually, so updates right now. Chris Pratt no longer playing Mario. Instead, playing Mario, we have Steve Buscemi.
I was like, wait, is this real? They just Steve Buscemi. No. With his little bug eyes. That'd actually be really funny.
I'd watch that. He just goes,
It's-a me, a Mario.
It's-a me, a Mario. That's pretty funny. I think Anthony Birch put up something recently where he was like, it was like all these movies and how like they're all about like overcoming racism or overcoming whatever. And then Mario, he said, "It's a me, Mario, and I am a perfect." And it was pretty funny. So Chris Pratt is kind of like that, I guess, from what I've heard, which is why he's being canceled, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if he's being canceled. I just think people are disenchanted.
He was half canceled because he goes to a church and would not comment on said problematic church.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know what church he goes to, so
I think it's Hillsong.
Homophobic.
Is it Hillsong?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Homophobic.
It's a church a lot of worship? Celebrities attend.
Yeah.
If they're a Christian celebrity, I think Justin Bieber attends there too.
Wait, isn't that Mosaic? No. They all suck. They might have good music, but they're homophobic.
Arguable.
I mean, like, in the Christian realm, it's, like, good music.
Yeah.
But is Christian music good? Not like Christian contemporary music.
No,
not at all. But except unless it's Semler. Baldridge. Fucking love Grace Baldridge. Check out Semler. I would love to get them on the podcast one day. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right.
Bonnie, how are you doing? You doing fine? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired, but I am alive.
Okay.
And that is enough.
That's actually pretty fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good to be alive.
Is it?
I guess so.
No, I don't want to die. If my therapist is listening to this, I do not want to die. I'm not suicidal. I do not have any intention of harming myself or anyone else.
Therapy.
I do go to therapy. I'm just moderately depressed all the time. It's okay.
This is my substitute for therapy. Yeah. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah. You know what? Okay. We're going to say, you know what we're calling this month? We're calling this month. October is officially bisexual, depressed, and overstimulated month.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yes. It's accurate.
It's true. And if anyone says, Daniel, shut up, you can shut the fuck up. I'm bisexual. Fuck you, bitch.
Ta-da! Big reveal.
Big reveal.
Yeah.
I'm not.
But you're supposed to be proud. You have pride. Welcome to the rainbow.
Cool. Yeah.
Are you just at peace with it?
Yeah, I'm like, it is what it is.
That's
like, I'm
fair.
Like, I feel like people, I mean, I get it. In a lot of circles, I'm thankful. I think I have a really safe community, and my closest family is pretty safe. Extended family, I don't know about that yet. But coming to that realization was like, yeah, I can explore that possibility and see what it is. But it's not like a, oh my God, roll out the red carpet kind of thing, because I don't feel different, you know. Mm. Which I feel like I mean, I felt like I knew myself more, but, and so I do get that for some people, like, it is a big thing and whatnot. And like, that is very important. So not to dismiss any of that or like devalue that. But for me, my own experience, I'm like, okay. Once I realized it, I was like, that's cool.
There you go.
And then it's the whole process after that. So, you know, here we go.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. We got to buy a king. And hello, everyone. I'm not just your sad dad, but I can be your sad parent. I'm trying to say that I'm non-binary. I don't know how to do it in a very punny way, but I guess I legally can't tell dad jokes 66% of the time anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. Hmm. So that
yeah. And I'm half gay on my mom's side.
That's good.
Jake came up with that one. I'll give him credit for that. It was in my Tinder bio for a little bit until I deleted it.
Yeah.
Like the count. Yeah.
Yeah. So fun, other fun fact, since we're deep diving into it. So when I was listening back to the episode that we did with Joey.
We're not listening back to.
Well, yeah.
While we were recording,
yeah.
Jake was quiet because
I was having an existential crisis and questioning my gender. And then I finally came to the conclusion, hey, everyone, I'm non-binary. As far as pronouns go, I'm using any and all of them. Go ahead and use the he's, the she's, the they's.
My preference is dumb and ass.
I'll take those two. I deserve them at this point, so I feel like I've earned it like a badge of honor.
Nice.
So yeah, I kind of knew for a while. I mean, that's kind of the thing about like being in the closet is that you've known for a while. You just don't necessarily have the name for it.
Yeah, or the safety, or like you've had your experience devalued or dismissed.
Exactly, and sometimes you're devaluing and dismissing your own experience too, and so
yeah.
Like it took me literally like having to do like a huge deep dive into my psyche, like for a bit. I'll be honest, like I thought, like I had a moment of my life where I thought I was just trans, and I don't want to say just trans is like, oh, vanilla ice cream bad thing. No. If you're trans, then that's awesome. You do you. But, like, for me, I was like, I relate to a lot of the things that this community is going through, but not 100%. And I don't know, like, I don't know what's going on there. And then, like, it took a while for me to, like, finally find that non-binary community. And yeah. Then, finally, that's when things started clicking. It's like, oh, yeah, I feel feminine, but not 100% of the time. And I feel masculine, but not 100% of the time. Yeah. Sometimes I don't want to be either, so.
Yeah, it's like when Joey was saying the, I was too, well, I had brought it up from their other podcast with Speaking in Church, where Joey said, I was too masculine for girls, and I was too feminine for men.
Yeah.
Or too masculine for women, and, you know, and, yeah.
That, yeah, no, it was literally that quote that really, really spoke to me. And so, yeah, Joey, if you're listening to this, thank you.
Yeah. yeah. I texted Joey the day, or I think the day I realized it, which was like the following Sunday.
Yeah.
I think it was me and Bonnie were at a coffee shop and we're talking about like all this stuff. And afterwards, I was like, shit, am I bi? And like, as I was going home, like my mind was racing and all this stuff. And I got home and I deep dove. And I'm like, okay, so can he be bisexual and still have an attraction to men, although maybe not romantically or sexually? And over, it was like, maybe. Yes. And I was like, what the fuck, you know? So it's like this huge, I think like figuring it out is big. Coming out can be big with certain people, I think, for some of us. And I think, I don't know, I think you came out to me in my car.
Yeah.
And so I think, I don't know, some people I think it's safer and easier to do that for, but I think there are also, I want to also leave space for people who don't have the safety to be able to have that experience.
Exactly.
And that is really hard. So if you are listening to this and you're struggling with your sexuality or your gender identity, like, please, like, if you need someone to talk to, let us know. You don't have to be a Patreon member to do that. Just DM us. We are here to listen. and we're not going to put it anywhere public. You can just let us know and say, hey, like if you haven't been able to tell anyone. But I think all three of us have experienced something at some point. And so in that realm. And so we want to be a place for that. But yeah, I don't know. There's not much else I think that we could say that you don't already know. So
yeah.
And if you're still going to church and your church is not affirming, as Kevin Garcia says, why the fuck are you going?
It's true.
So, well, on that note, we are now Queercast.
It's true.
We are going to transition, and we're going to talk about Bonnie.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
Transition time.
Alrighty then. Let's dive deep into Bonnie's psyche.
We're going to put
a
lamp.
Dark place.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one lamp pointed at her, kind of like an interrogation right now. Just kidding, we don't. We just have one light in my room on a fan because it's still a hot day today. Maybe by the time this
comes out. I am wearing a full suit and a trench coat. I do look like a gumshoe. Like from and I've lost all my color. I am only black and white and grayscale. So mm-hmm. And also, the voice is going to turn into, like, an old-timey detective, too.
So you're like Spider-Man Noir?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, except without the Spider-Man powers, but still with the depression.
I mean, have you tried to use Spider-Man powers?
Hold on. Let's test this out right now.
No, he doesn't. Okay, Jake is trying to do the Tobey Maguire shit. Spider-Man does not have the power to produce web by himself. He has to make the web. He has the little capsule thingies like Tom Holland and Andrew Garfield.
You don't know about my web-slinging abilities?
Okay. I think that varies by Spider-Man.
We had to test that one out
Peter
first.
Parker, he does have the web shooters.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to get back into it later.
The only time that they don't have web shooters is with the symbiote.
Sure, whatever. Anyway, let's actually like stop fucking around and actually ask Bonnie a question. So, hey Bonnie, what's going on? That's the first question.
Oh, okay. Well, what's currently happening is I'm sitting in Daniel's bedroom waiting for questions.
Yeah, that sounds weird.
Yeah. fair enough.
To be fair, we always record in my bedroom. Nothing weird happens, guys.
I mean,
besides...
This podcast is weird enough.
Yeah.
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 Exactly. All right. I guess go a little bit into, like... if you had to write a paragraph describing yourself, like, how would you describe yourself in, like, a very quick statement?
Okay. I would describe myself as an awkward, queer, neurodivergent person. And I think that sums it up. I don't need a paragraph. That's
me
in a sentence.
Queer, neurodivergent, weird... Awkward.
Well, spiritual.
Yeah. Oh, spiritual. Okay.
Yeah. That's also what shows up on your Pokemon sheet as your types.
Queer, awkward, neurodivergent.
I think it shows up on all of ours now, legally.
Yeah. What was that joke I made about earlier? I became funny but lost my rights.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, we love
fun.
It.
Welcome to the club.
Oh, I don't feel like I'll experience that soon.
Oh, yeah.
Soon enough. So, Bonnie, tell us a little bit, like, about your... I mean, you've told me and Jake, obviously, but I don't think you've told anyone listening to this, for the most part. Like, what has been your experience growing up with the church, or lack thereof? I know you mentioned a little bit in the last episode with the Dirty Rotten Church Kids about, like, growing up. And, like, serving for the last, since you were, like, 9 years old. Like, just kind of, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been at the same church since I was two. And my mom has been the children's pastor there a little off and on my whole life. So we've always been very connected to the children's ministry. And I haven't been serving since I was nine, but probably... fifth, sixth grade is when I started serving in ministry, and then it was pretty nonstop. And yeah, I grew up pretty... My parents started deconstructing their own faith while I was pretty young. So I've kind of gotten to see the shift happen within my own family. Like, and I'm the oldest of three. So I got the most strict version of parenting and...
As happens.
Faith. Yeah, which is just how it works.
So... Jake and I have recently started going to the same church that you are currently at, as you obviously know. And one of the reasons why, and I'm asking this because I know some of the history, you know, we've talked about before, but one of the reasons why I originally came to the church was because of their statement with LGBTQIA plus community and how they were affirming and all that other stuff, and like their whole statement on that, which is shocking for many churches. But I know you've been there through a lot of transition. You've been there with a lot of different things that have happened at this church. And so, like, what has been your experience besides the serving, although that is important, the fact that you've served for so long, what's been your experience with all of that?
Well, specifically with the queer issue, a lot. So I was a little young when, like, the conversation started, so I was not totally aware of what was happening or why it was an issue. I did take a conservative stance at that point, just because that's what I had heard. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people left the church because there was that conversation even happening, which caused us to kind of reevaluate our position as a church. And then I started questioning my own sexuality because I was in middle school and high school, and that's... what tends to happen. And I was put in a small group with mostly adults, all adults. I was the only minor, to talk about sexuality in a third way environment, which, if you don't know, is like you accept all sides, right? Like any yeah. position is welcome. Like,
I think it's important to address a couple of things. First, third way in the sense of, like, critical race theory and Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
Very different than the way that this church uses third way.
Right. And in terms of sexuality, it was appropriated
for that. Definitely. And, like, the way that they have expressed third way from the pulpit has been, like, the balance of the contemplative practices with the charismatic practices. So that means contemplative, meaning doing more things like meditation or Lectio Divina, stuff like that, and liturgy stuff, but charismatic with more experience, art, music, etc., being able to balance those things. But they have also used it as a way of moderation, of like not conservative and not liberal, not traditional and not progressive, but really someplace that holds attention of the two, which I think which comes from Richard Rohr talking about, like, Richard Rohr came up with this idea called the third way, I don't know how long ago, where he calls it the tertium quid. He says it's what Jesus says is the long, straight and narrow, or the long and narrow path that few travel down upon, where it's, you hold the tension of opposites, which I think is a beautiful idea of holding the tension of opposites.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that there is a level where that is a, what's the word? Privileged thing that you can sometimes do.
It definitely is.
Yeah, because if you're not privileged and you're like a marginalized identity, you can't really hold the tension of opposites if one of those opposites is actually harming you.
Yeah, especially with the power imbalance
mm-hmm.
that there is. And yeah, it was not executed well. Like, the intention behind it is really good, but the way it was executed was just that people were allowed to say really homophobic things. And nobody really pushed back against it.
Mm.
It was kind of like, yeah, if you're queer, you're allowed to be here, but we're also not going to do anything to, like, stop people from saying harmful things.
Yeah.
So that was really hard for me to process as a 14, 15-year-old queer kid.
Sounds traumatic, too.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. The intention behind it was really good.
Yeah.
But it was... it was definitely a harmful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still unpacking a lot of that internalized tension. Yeah. I really don't feel comfortable in any community that presents themselves as third way because of that.
Yeah.
I did not feel safe. And yeah, but I'm trying to like get better at not holding those like prejudices against the third way model and like engage in those conversations while still protecting myself and maintaining boundaries, obviously.
Yeah. I definitely think that there's a point in third way where people need to take a step back and realize that even though beliefs don't necessarily line up, there are still people behind those beliefs and people behind the opposite of your beliefs as well. And so, like, I'm really sorry that you had to experience all of the, like, the horrible homophobic things that people would say and probably still do say. In some cases.
Yeah.
And so, like, no one should ever have to experience that, like, despite what they believe about the LGBTQ community. It's like, it's almost like, sure, you can believe it, but we didn't ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot. Who asked?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely, like, that is a tension, right? Of being... I feel like a lot of marginalized marginalized communities, we often have to play the nice card, you know, or mm-hmm. or whatever. But it's often the conservative or the side that's in power that never has to play nice. They expect us to, and oftentimes, like when I've had conversations with more conservative folks, it tends to be them trying to gaslight. And trying to, like, bait me into saying certain things mm-hmm. or to get emotionally charged. And then be like, oh, I'm just trying to have a conversation, man. It's like, are you? Because you're using a lot of language that's actually derogatory or harmful or offensive. And you came at me pretty aggressively. I don't think that is just trying to have a conversation. I think that's you actually attacking.
Right. And I think a lot of it, like, the church loves to use the metaphor of, like, a table and like who's welcome, and yeah. It's always just widely accepted that if you're a straight cisgender person, your place—I mean, with other caveats—your yes. place is accepted at the table, and then they let queer people at the table.
If we're not at the kids' table,
right?
Which I want to be at the kids' table.
Yeah, the kids' table sounds a little bit more fun. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
but. It's still like the same, like they allow us to be there, you know. Yeah. We're not, it's not like a right, it's a
yeah,
we're letting you do this, so be nice to us.
Yeah
it does definitely feel like the cis white man, I don't mean to be dunking on all cis white men, because
it's not all cis white men.
Yeah, because it's not, it truly isn't, because like I struggled with a lot of that talk very recently, so but there is a definitely power dynamic with people who are, you know, cis, white, and especially male, who seem to be the people, you know, hosting this party, you know, yeah. Even though it's supposed to be, I don't know, what, a Jesus party? Jesus is supposed to be the real host of the party, so who, you're the one that got the invitation, you're not inviting other people.
Yeah.
You're just being an asshole at the front door saying, oh, I don't see your name on the list, when... Jesus never would hire a...
There is someone yelling in the background.
Yeah.
And I hope you're okay,
yeah, person. No, that was a little concerning.
Yeah, that was a bit concerning, but it stopped, so...
Yeah.
That's either a good sign or a bad sign.
Yeah. This is a sign to check on your loved ones and text them right now. Pause this podcast. Tell them that you love them, that you cherish them, that you care for them. Like, seriously. I think it was maybe a child who's doing something unsafe, is what it sounds like right now. But yes, I liked what Adrian said last week, where the goal, like his goal during deconstruction has been continuing making the table longer and bigger for more people to join, which I think is a really beautiful image. And I know that there's that one song, you know, and they actually said this in a recent episode of like, you know, the big, big house song with lots and lots of rooms or whatever. I didn't hear about that until being a youth intern at a church. But I think that image is a beautiful one of continuing to make the table longer. I've been reflecting a lot recently on that popular hymn. I think it's Psalm 20, not hymn, but You know, John Foreman did that song House of God Forever a long time ago, which he's not canceled, guys. He came out as being affirming of LGBT youth, right? Wait, John Foreman's Switchfoot, right?
Yeah.
He came out as affirming of LGBTQ people, and that was awesome. So he's that the opposite. That was really cool. Yeah.
Way to go. A PogChamp moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of at this point, it's like, all right, get with the game, y'all. Like, what the fuck are y'all doing? And it shouldn't be a thing that we celebrate of a Christian contemporary music person being like, yeah, I'm cool with LGBTQIA. Like, you're all welcome and you're all accepted and you are who you are, you know? And it was in reaction to Grace Baldridge on TikTok. Anyways, they have that song, House God Forever, that comes from one of the Psalms. I don't fucking know off the top of my head. Psalm 23? I think so. Anyways, I've been reflecting on that for whatever reason. It's been on my mind when I've been meditating where, you know, like, it says that you prepare a table in the presence of my enemies. And, like, I thought about that and I was meditating on that idea, right? Like, if you have a table prepared with food, the expectation is that whoever is there gets to eat with you, right? And we've often used it as a way of God protecting us from our enemies. But, like, I was thinking about that. And, yes, a psalm is about, like, protection or whatever in the midst of whatever the fuck. But, like, I feel like the implication is that if God prepares this table in the midst of persecution, midst of our enemies, we're supposed to invite them. Like, there's enough food. There's enough tables, right? So we invite them, which is a very drastic and very radical thing to do. But also, it's like, why do we always have to be the one to do that? You know? Why can't they also be the one to do that? But I think that's the thing where we're, which I fucking hate, is that, and it's not, and I don't put it for Jesus, I put it for actually, like, the good of humanity and knowing psychology of, like, sometimes we have to show as a way of putting a mirror to them of saying, like, this is what you're supposed to do. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a lot of whiskey, and so my brain's in that headspace right now of whiskey space, and maybe I'm rambling. I don't know.
No, you made sense. Okay, at least cool. To me.
Don't worry, you're valid, King.
Thanks. Thanks, Dad, or Mom, or...
Parental unit.
Yeah. So, the whole third way thing. The way that it was presented in the past sounds like it was harmful, and that isn't... okay, and I feel like, I don't know, at least one of the pastors, I haven't talked to two of them, but at least one of them I feel like would be apologetic. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not a conversation I've had. It's only recently that I've started actually processing that everything that happened then.
Totally. No, I think it's cool that you still got to be part of that conversation. Although, I'm like, why the fuck weren't there more queer folk there? But then I look at where the church is now versus where it likely was then. Was it safe enough for queer folk to go to?
Well, there was one other queer person, and they were, I was not really, I was still questioning at that point. I was 14. There was one grown man who was queer, but he just validated all of the homophobic things that were being said, which is survival. Yes. I totally get it. But it was very confusing for a young queer person to hear.
Yeah.
A lot of the... I can imagine it would be a little difficult. I don't know if this was the exact scenario, but, like, listening to... it was like, I'm openly gay. And then someone gets up on stage and goes, all gays are going to burn in hell. And he's like, that's fair. Or some bullshit like that.
What?
Yeah, that's narrative. Fair.
Like, so stupid.
Yeah, it was a lot of the metaphor of, like, well, if gay people can get married, then what's going to stop pedophiles? And
I mean, pedophiles are often married. That argument's bullshit.
Yeah, but
I get it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't get that argument.
No, I get their thing where... So if you put yourself in a conservative stance, right?
Right, it's a morality thing.
It's not even that. Like, I mean, I think many of us, all three of us from what it sounds like, all grew up conservative to some degree. Maybe not you, Bonnie. I know Jake and I both had more conservative parents or whatever, or churches at least.
Yeah.
My entire background was conservative through and through.
Yeah. And that was an argument that was made when I was youth pastor on staff of our last church, where we had two women come to our church who they automatically assumed were gay. And I'm like, can't they just be two women who come to church? But they're obviously different ages. Could they be adopted? I literally said it like that in a staff meeting. And I'm like, oh, they could be, or they could be lesbian. I'm like, okay, and who gives a fuck? But it turned into like this discussion that I had to have with the youth pastor and the head pastor, where at lunch for like 30 minutes we're talking about this, and they were using that thing. Well, if we are affirming of homosexuality and the Bible is clear, like they are very convinced the Bible is clear, then what are we going to say about pedophilia? Like, are we going to allow pedophiles to be on our youth ministry staff? Are we going to allow, you know, and like they started naming things. And I was like, well, first of all, homosexuality isn't a sin if you actually look at the language. All that language is actually talking about pedophilia, right. Not about homosexuality at all. Mm-hmm. But like when you are so convinced, and that's the thing that's been really hard for me to understand, wrap my head around, and like giving myself grace in the past of like, there was a time where I was so convinced, right, that if I did not evangelize, I am responsible for people going to hell. If I did not confront people about their sin, I am responsible for them going to hell. But didn't Jesus come to save everyone regardless of all that shit? This is taking off whatever you regard as sin. Like, we also say in the same breath, Jesus came to die for everyone, so all is forgiven, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a conditional statement.
Yeah.
That's what pisses me off, is that it becomes this cognitive dissonance of, yes, Jesus, I mean, we have that literally an episode called Jesus Loves You, Terms and Conditions May Apply.
Yeah.
For right. a reason, because that's how people act. It's like, Jesus loves you, you are forgiven, you are saved, but terms and conditions apply.
And there's also, like, this really weird thing where sexual sins are so much worse than every other kind of sin.
Like, why? Okay, I'm not going to ask why. I know why the church is so obsessed with sexual sins, because they're all fucking repressed.
Y'all, in other words, y'all's horny.
Well, yeah. it's also control.
Yes,
it is
control.
If you can control True. Like how much sex people are having, who they're having sex with, you can control population. You can control.
Yeah,
like,
it's true.
You can control women. You can control queer people.
Yeah, and I mean it's always controlling women and controlling the quote unquote marginalized, right?
Right.
There's actually a song that comes to mind. It feels like a stretch, but trust me, it's by a band called Ninja Sex Party.
God.
There's a song that they released. It's called 6969, and it's
nice.
It's about, and even though it feels like super sci-fi-ish and stuff like that, like it actually has somewhat of a point. Like basically, it's an entire ballad telling the story of Danny Sexbank, the lead singer of the band, and also Ninja Brian, his best friend, going to the future, to the year 6969, to only to find out that in that year, 6969, that sex has been outlawed, and there is a council of dick elders.
What?
That have banned sex, and basically said, if people have sex, then they'll develop free will. This is the only way we can control the people.
But it's 6969. It's the year of sex.
Exactly. Which is why the dick elders have control over that year. And so but then Ninja Sex Party came to save the day and killed them all. Killed all the dick elders and had sex. A multi-billion person orgy.
That's beautiful.
It was pretty beautiful. Don't get me wrong. They're a comedy band. But like, I don't know. It just reminded me of that ADHD moment. I don't know.
No.
That connected.
It connected.
Yeah. It's controlling, and there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, if they wrote an entire lore to that song, I'm sure that there's reasons why they wanted to do that. And I mean, sex is a thing that people have used to control others for centuries, right? And
since the dawn of time, really.
Yeah, and purity culture has been a way of. I mean, purity culture is a bitch, and that's one of the number one things that we talk about, and that really started a lot with evangelicalism, and parts of purity culture have been around for all of centuries, right? The church has always been very obsessed with sex, and like, I don't know, go fuck.
Just go fuck.
If you're a dude, give another dude a blowjob if that's what you want to do. If you're a girl, eat another girl out. Who gives a fuck? Do your fucking thing.
Eat him out, eat her out, eat them out. And yeah,
like live your life. Like, gee, it's so dumb. My favorite thing has been like, you know, oh, don't have premarital sex, or no, don't commit adultery is what the Bible said. The Bible doesn't say anything about premarital sex.
Yeah,
it says adultery. Mm-hmm. It's not adultery if I'm not married. But then they're always like, but you're committing adultery against your future spouse. I don't think they're gonna give a shit unless they're highly like evangelical,
and that also like. Highly constricts it to future spouse, and also This isn't permission to go cheat on your girlfriend. Fuck you.
Yeah, don't fucking cheat, you asshole.
No.
Polygamy? Cool.
Yeah. Like,
consensually.
Consensual. Yeah. Yes. Like, an understanding between multiple partners and understanding between those multiple partners, like a consensual, like, relationship and understanding where both of them get to pick the person and so that there's no, like, falling out or hurt feelings. Yes. Beautiful. Fantastic. Wonderful.
Yeah, don't fucking cheat. No, like, don't be a piece of shit. But yeah, anyways, I don't know how we got on that rabbit trail.
Yeah. But I want to bring it back to Bonnie again. With the question, so when I feel like this question's a little unfair cuz I know part of the answer, but obviously the audience will not know. But
that's you guys.
What was like, so you were in this more hostile environment at church, and then there came the moment where, you know, you discovered your own sexuality. What was that process like?
Figuring out that I was queer?
Yeah. And then the moments, like, after that as well.
Well, it was, I knew, I had always had attraction to girls. I in retrospect, I understand that. But there was one specific girl who was, like, one of my best friends, and I was in love with her. I mean, maybe not in love, but, like...
Major crush. Yeah.
Nice.
And my best friend at the time was the only person I really talked to about that, and she is also queer. So we were just kind of echoing back to each other these feelings of, like, girls are so pretty, it would be nice to kiss girls, but we're both straight. And straight people can want to kiss girls, and that's fine, because we're both straight and we both want to kiss girls. This makes sense. And it wasn't until I first voiced this feeling to an older friend, and I was like, yeah, in this A to B to E, you know, it made sense in my head. And she was like, no, you're not straight if you want to kiss a girl. That's not how it works. And then a year after that, I finally was like, oh yeah, that's not how that works.
She had to plant the seed, and it took you a year to dissect it.
Way too long. It wasn't until I started meeting other people who were openly queer that I was like, oh.
Isn't that funny? How, like, when you start talking to people who are openly queer about things and have actually processed it, of how that affects everything.
Yeah, exactly. That definitely helped me in, like, my journey too, so.
Right.
Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Joey.
Representation is everything.
Yeah, it's true.
And so, here you are. You found out and was like, wait a minute, I'm not straight.
You're half gay on your mom's side. Or your dad's side.
No, my mom's side.
Damn, shout out.
Shout out.
Yeah, so I wanted to tell.
Oh yeah, that is your mom's side.
My best friends. You know, my revelation.
What, can you please explain how it is on your mom's side? Because I think it's just a really funny...
I don't know if that's...
Okay, no.
That's
no,
someone else's story.
Yes, never mind. Yes. Good.
But, yeah, I wanted to send an email. So I sent a mass email to, like, a couple... Or the same email. I might have just copied. But I sent an email.
So why did you send an email?
I was not allowed to have any kind of social media or a phone. I was in high school. I just... could not have it.
Which was very recent, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I was 17 and a half. No, I was 3 months away from being 18.
So that was a year and a half ago.
Yeah, when I was finally allowed to get social media.
Jesus Christ.
I was 17 when I got a phone permanently. I had one for like a few months. Yeah. But...
Love your mom, but geez.
Yeah.
I still think that was a little intense.
Yeah.
If only because it was way harder to maintain. I had someone... And this was a homeschooler. I was talking to a homeschooler, and I told him I don't have a phone. And he looked at me and said, wait, so are you, like, Amish or something?
Living in an Amish paradise.
Thank you, Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I sent an email to, like, probably 5 friends, just saying, like, hey, I'm bisexual. And I never saw these people in person. They were pretty much, like, I'd met them in person, but... they live too far to say, so I had to tell them electronically. And then a few days later, I came home from school, and my mom was very upset with me. Like, fuming. I remember going to the grocery store after that, and it was the worst experience of my life. Like, it was awful. And then we came home. We had to have a conversation with my dad. I don't remember really what was said, but it boiled down to, like, one of your friend's parents told us. They didn't tell me who it was, which also made me feel very unsafe because then I did not know which of my friends were safe to talk to.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then, and it was also like, I don't think that this is true of you.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that was hard. And then I went back in the closet and I kind of believed that they were right, but like, clearly here I am. No, that clearly wasn't right. And it wasn't until I was that was when I was a freshman in high school. It wasn't until I was a junior, when I was a junior that I finally came out officially at the pizzaology?
Pyology?
Pyology. That's where I came out to my mom. What a place. Yeah. It was a moment. It was really scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she's come a long way. She's super cool and affirming. Yeah, so is my dad.
Which is what I was going to ask is, like, church stuff and parents, where are they now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my parents have grown a lot. The church has grown a lot. I was kind of ready to leave the church I was at just because it wasn't feeling safe. But, no, there's been a lot of positive change really recently that I feel more comfortable having that be my church home going forward. And I'm super proud of my parents and all the work they've done to get to where they are. It means a lot.
Yeah.
I still have all that trauma. Need to unpack that, but totally. I appreciate.
Therapy. Yeah. No, I mean, your mom was definitely one of the most welcoming people, and seeing her interact, because there's been a lot of queer folk coming to our church recently, which has been really cool to see just because that's so rare. Right?
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be, but it's so rare, at least at the churches I've been to, where I've been to churches that were not affirming at all, not accepting, really, or accepting but not affirming. Actually, yeah, that's been my experience. It's either all over the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Church growing up, not affirming, not accepting. The last two churches I've been to were accepting, not affirming. This church is both accepting and affirming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember one of the people who've recently started coming, she is in an open, like, or not open, but, like, she's openly in a relationship, is, you know, getting married soon to her partner by one of our pastors. And I remember she went up and led worship for the first time. And I talked to her afterwards, like, you did so well. Like, that was just really good. Like, thank you for doing that. Like, that was just really... Like, it was just a good, like, you sounded really great, and I just wanted to affirm her with all that stuff. But she mentioned, she's like, yeah, my old church, like, that was my first time singing, and at my old church, like, this is my first time singing on a platform at a church where I've been able to be openly queer. And she was mentioning how free that made her feel, which is a powerful thing.
That is so amazing, too. It's like, how, like... You have to be able to see in person to see someone just so, like, so in the moment, so entranced by that spirituality. And, you know, being able to do so 100% as themselves. And, like, you've probably seen it 1,000 times for, like, anyone who's, you know, straight and cis.
Yeah.
But, like, this is, like, you know, but someone who was, like, just... who's been burdened to hide his aspect of themselves for so long and then, like, go up on stage and sing like that. Like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, it is so gorgeous. And you could, like, you could hear the passion. You could hear the, like, a small bit of sorrow, but, like, mostly, mostly joy and happiness. And, like, it's indescribable. I'm having a hard time describing what it is.
Well, I think it's just beautiful. Like, there's so many people who are able to be authentically themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the shit that I'm so pissed off about the church and the big failure that it's had. And it's not just to queer folk. It's to Black folk. It's to Indigenous folk. It's to Latin folk, Asian folk. Like, whatever ethnicity or minority that you may be a part of, neurodivergent people as well. Like, the church hasn't been a safe place for a long time for anyone who isn't white, cis, mostly male. Up until recently, I would say, you know, white females can now have power if they submit to their husbands. Fuck you, Mark Driscoll.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, fuck you, Mark Driscoll. Yeah. God, fuck. Pisses me off.
As long as... women can have power as long as they're not the pastor of the church or some bullshit like that narrative.
It's all fucking bullshit. In mainstream evangelicalism.
They serve in hospitality or with children. So it's only if women are doing the jobs that men already expect them to do at home.
Which is very important. Like, I think it's very important to acknowledge that there are actually other denominations besides mainstream evangelical churches, which includes Baptist, a lot of Presbyterian, etc. Like, a lot of the mainstream denominations, like the United Methodist Church, pretty fucking progressive.
Definitely.
The Lutheran Church can be progressive. Like, if you go to the, I think it's ELCA, which ironically is, like, Evangelical Lutheran or whatever. I grew up Evangelical Lutheran, but as Missouri Synod, I don't know. Fucking don't give a shit. Yeah. But some of them, like, they will have, like, women head pastors, all that stuff, which is great. And whatnot, but the United Methodist Church is one that I've seen is, like, fully progressive, like, affirming of LGBT youth, has been, like, women can be pastors and all that other stuff, like, racial reconciliation, or not even racial reconciliation, like, affirming of critical race theory, which is a big thing recently, of churches saying, like, Mark Driscoll coming out and saying, actually, that might be our news article. Well, we're gonna save that. We're gonna save that. Yeah. But anyways, the church has been safe. And it needs to be. Like, if it truly believes that it is the Church of Christ or whatever, whatever you want to fucking say it is, like, if you truly follow Jesus, look at who he fucking talked to. Look at who he ate with. Like, think about what Jesus would be doing now. Like, if Jesus were here today, what the fuck, who would he be hanging out with? He'd be going to all the Pride marches.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be going on to all the Black Lives Matter marches, protests. Be going to the Stop Asian Hate protests. He'd be going to all these different things and fighting for the civil rights of human beings, but we are so fucking caught up in being numb by the fucking bullshit-ass religious elite that we aren't able to see it.
Yeah, I think we've had so long, like, you know, have always been preaching against Pharisees and then not realizing
which is that. Racist.
Yeah.
Which is actually, like, anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading about that recently.
Yeah. Like, constantly demonizing Pharisees as anti-Semitic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Go on. Sorry.
But also kind of like, you know, in the same aspect, in that process, they're doing the exact same shit that Jesus would have called them out for.
Yeah.
And be like, you know, like, the rules weren't specific enough, so we made more specific rules. And it's like, well, the rules weren't specific for a goddamn reason.
Right.
And that's what Jesus said. And so that's why, like, when it comes to multiple, like, listen here. There are multiple interpretations of the Bible because some of those rules in there aren't as specific. And that's okay.
But also there's multiple interpretations of literally every religious text that has ever existed.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how life works.
Yeah. But to say that one is more important or more accurate or more valuable than anyone else's interpretation, unless you're actually, like, deep diving into, like, the historical context behind
there
it.
There you go.
Yeah.
I was going
to
say.
You have to deep dive into the historical context behind
it. Exegesis.
Yes. But also, you have to realize that, even if you start doing that as well, some of those answers are still going to be vague.
It can be, yeah.
And so you have to accept them as vague and open to multiple interpretations.
Yes. Yeah, and it's ironic because the King James New King James Version or King James Version, whatever, I guess is pretty accurate for the most part to a lot of the original language. But the NIV is commonly used as well. I think it's one of the top ones along with the ESV, which are two of the most politically charged translations of the Bible.
Which I had no idea. And those were the two versions that I was raised on personally.
Yeah. And same here. And then when I went to APU, they had us read the NRSV. We talked about Big Red a couple of weeks ago and bearing our cross by carrying this big-ass fucking Bible. The NRSV is actually really interesting because first off, the Bible that they had us buy for all of our Bible classes has a full commentary where they give you all of the historical language, like the historical references and also the language translations of the different things. So you can see like, oh, hey, it uses this specific word and this is all the different things that means. So like, for example, one of my favorite words, and I have it tattooed on me, is ruach. It is Hebrew for breath, wind, and spirit, and it is similar to the Greek word pneuma, which is breath, wind, spirit. Now, when God breathes into Adam, breathes the breath of life into him, that can be interpreted as God puts his spirit into Adam, or God puts wind into Adam. Same when Jesus is walking on waters, and like, oh my God, it's a ghost. It's the same fucking word. Like, it can bring up so many different interpretations, right? Because that's what language does. That's what historical context does. That's what cultural context does. And so NRSV is dope. New Jerusalem Bible, also pretty dope. I've read some really amazing translations. I think there's one where it talks about Lilith, which is interesting because Lilith is not used in Protestant liturgy. Talked a little bit in Catholicism, but is mostly a Jewish concept of Lilith being like Adam's first wife. Mm-hmm. I've been learning about that recently. It's been interesting. Yeah. Anyways.
Which, that means that there's literally the first human, or like, according to, you know, their A beginning.
Yeah. Which is such a good, cool translation. Yeah. In A beginning.
First wife, which means that they had to have separated, or did she die?
I think she got... there's actually an episode on Black Mass Appeal. Yes, guess what? I've listened to a Satanist podcast. Oh, boo. Oh, my God. But they actually did a deep dive into Lilith's thing. I'll put that in the show notes if I remember when I listened to this. Because it was actually really fascinating listening to that. But also, next episode, we have my friend Delaney coming on, who she teaches a lot of folklore and has currently been researching a lot of the Lilith stuff. For one of the classes that she teaches. We'll try to make sure to have her talk a little bit about if she knows anything about that. But she'll also talk about one of the things that she mentioned when we first started the podcast, talking about Genesis's folklore, which is beautiful because actually a lot of Jewish people believe that Genesis isn't literal. It's folklore. That's actually a very modern concept, which is ironic. Conservatives think that, or fundamentalists think that there's... is the most historical way of viewing the Bible. No, it's actually a very modern perspective. You're progressives. Guess what? If you're listening to this and you're a fundamentalist, you're a progressive, you bitch.
Lol.
But not the good kind of progressive. Like you've caused a lot of harm, so suck my ass. Disrespectfully. Hey, respectfully is with consent. Oh, well, that's consensual. Yeah. Respectfully, yeah. Anyways, you can
botched metaphor. Abort, abort.
Abort, abort. Get out. Wait, we can't make jokes about that. It's illegal in Texas. Oh, we're in California. It's legal.
Yeah, we're in California.
Fuck you, Texas. Yeah, anyways.
Get better. Anyways. We believe in you, but not by much.
Yeah.
Anyway, we kind of went on a very...
I'm starting to feel the whiskey a lot.
Yeah.
So that's where my rant's coming from.
But we kind of went off the rabbit trail. So, yeah. So we had that, you know, discussion about, you were outed and then you had to put yourself back in the closet again.
Yeah.
And then you finally were able to come out again. And how recently was that?
That was when I was a junior in high school. So three years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bonnie is our youngest member, guys.
It's true. I'm a baby. No. I'm too old. It's uncomfortable. I feel like I'm in a very weird, where like I feel too old and too young at the same time.
Wait till you turn 21. You know, literally, that's like the, like, that's when everything, every dynamic just goes, boom. Okay.
I'd say 23 is actually, oh, okay, yeah, because of the alcohol.
Yeah, because once you can do, like, once you can do
devil's lettuce and the devil's water.
Devil's lettuce and devil's water. Yeah, once you can do those, then it, like, it feels like all of a sudden, like, everything's changed on a dime. Even if you've done the shit before, like I have.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. But, yeah, this is me admitting in 4K that I may or may not have partaken in the substances before I was legally allowed to.
I mean, I did. I'm not going to say may or may not. I definitely did.
Yeah.
But statute of limitations is about, I'm 27, suck my ass.
I just don't know where legality lies upon that.
I could just say it was a joke. It was satire. This entire podcast.
I don't think anybody's gonna care that much.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's. If any of you rat us out, whatever.
Yeah, if you rat me out, I will find you. That's it. No further threat. I'll just find you.
What if some of the people who are listening right now like started listening to us after the Dirty Rotten Church Kids episode? Like, why the fuck am I still listening to this? If you listen this far, hey, we love you. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're a bunch of idiots.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very, like...
So then, by the time you did come out again, I mean, you felt safe, if not safe enough, with your parents to do so. Or at least with your mom.
Yeah.
To tell her. But what was it like doing... Like, what was the church's response to all of that? Even, like, when you were outed?
That was pretty private. My mom, when I was outed, my mom made me have a conversation with one of the pastors because she wasn't sure if I would still be allowed to serve, which I was. It was fine.
Okay, please, for everyone, what did the pastor say? Like, what was that conversation, if you don't mind us asking?
Honestly, I don't really remember. That was quite a few years ago, and I tried to block out, I think, as much of...
Okay.
That whole period of my life.
Yeah.
In general. Mm-hmm. 'Cause even though the response was like, no, you're good, just the idea that I might not be welcome in the space where I've grown up.
Yeah.
Was...
It's a hard thing.
Was hard, for sure.
Sometimes that just sucks.
That's just not okay. Like, yeah. You shouldn't have to... That shouldn't be a thing that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was... Yeah. And then when I came out again, I did not make a big deal about it at church. Like, I was not comfortable doing that. And I still, like, if it comes up in conversation, like, I'll share it. I don't try to hide it.
Yeah.
You know, I wear Pride Doc Martens to church all the time. So if people are observant, they know. But I also don't, like, to everyone I meet, be like, hi, I'm bisexual. Hi, I'm bisexual. Like...
Yeah. You don't do that. I do that. I'm bisexual.
I guess I am wearing my, I have a non-binary pin that I've recently been wearing because I feel more powerful when I wear it. Like, I'm above all you normal human beings.
Hell yeah, monarch.
Hell yeah, monarch moment. No, not literally. But it does, like, it helps you, like, really feel like a sense of belonging. And fun fact, I've been actually wearing my non-binary pin at work, like literally right next to my name tag. No one usually says anything, like even my coworkers. And then I go to our church and guess what? First person, like one of the first people that says good morning to me points to my pin and says, hey, I love your pin. And like just being affirming and like, you know, like accepting too.
Yeah,
it's so nice.
It is a nice... it's a very privileged thing to experience that now.
It is.
But even then, like, I think there's still some fear that I have of telling like certain individuals, like, hey, yeah, I am bisexual.
Exactly. You know?
Oh, there are people who I absolutely wouldn't tell.
Yeah.
I'm not going to blast my sexuality, or not my sexuality, but my gender identity. I'm not going to blast that on Facebook.
Yeah, I did it on Twitter, but I have like 5 followers, so I don't care.
Although, I mean, yeah, I did on Twitter as well, just because there's a lot of, online friends that helped me along the way.
Yeah.
That, like, when I did come out, they're like, oh my God. Like, part of them were like, I knew the entire time. like fuck you, I knew the entire time.
Yeah.
It took you long enough, and there's a couple of those. There's also one of them that was like, you know, I'm so happy that you found yourself, and low-key, like, they were like a huge inspiration for me to like come out in the first place. Like, they like took a step ahead of me, even though it's not the same journey. They left like little footprints in the snow for me to be able to walk through myself.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And I think that's a beautiful thing of being able to come out and live authentically as yourself.
Yeah.
Like
being
able to have that experience is so nice and refreshing.
Definitely. But I also think there is a pressure to come out for a lot of queer people. And like if you're feeling pressured, you don't owe coming out to anybody. Your sexuality, your gender, really the only people who need to know is yourself. Yep. And if you're in like a relationship where that is important, then they should know too. But other than that, you don't owe anybody an explanation of your identity.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah,
exactly.
You can share it if you want to.
Yeah.
But it's not.
I also think that another thing that we need to express is that for a lot of, especially like parents out there that like are straight, but are have kids that are part of the LGBTQ community, think that, oh, maybe this is like I want to be accepting, but I want to be like 100% sure that they're like completely serious and may have made up their mind and like this isn't a phase, mm-hmm. you know? And let me tell you, it's okay if it's a phase, straight up. Like, that's the beautiful thing about sexuality. That's the beautiful thing about gender identity. You are on your own path and your own journey. And sometimes, not all the time, most of the time people get it pretty accurate. But like, there are some examples of people that just, they start walking down a path and then they realize, oh wait, no, this isn't right. This isn't the one for me. But it's usually people that are like, oh, I'm bisexual, as kind of like a gateway into go, no, I'm actually just gay. Right. It just kind of like a half stepping stone to feel safer. But, you know, but that doesn't mean all bisexuals are gay or all bisexuals are straight but are in denial. No, that's not what it means. So
right.
Even if people are in this temporary phase, that's nothing to fear. It's something to, in fact, embrace. Just like, yeah, I'll be with you no matter what you choose. I'll be with you no matter where you go. You are on your own beautiful journey, and what you label yourself now doesn't mean you're going to label yourself like that in the future.
Yeah, there was something I read, I don't remember where, but it said, impermanence does not equal unimportance. And I think that's really true. Like, something, it doesn't have to be permanent for it to be really important to you in your life.
Yeah.
And it should be respected by other people no matter what.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's why I've been learning a lot also, like, not to change the subject, but a lot about deconstruction as well, too. It's like, on this journey, on this path, whatever, like, on this journey of life, right? Like, you may be going down a path and you may say, you know what, no, I'm not Christian. I'm actually atheist or non-theist or I'm agnostic or Muslim. Like, I want to be Muslim or Satanist, whatever it is. But, like, I think the biggest thing that I've heard from some friends, heard from some people, and then also for myself, is I am this for now. Because that leaves so much freedom, which is a beautiful thing, to allowing life to be life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I am bisexual for now. I am, arguably, Christian for now. I am, you know, whatever it is, like, realizing that life is ever-changing, life is ever-movement, we are ever-growing, and we are ever-evolving. There is a constant death and rebirth of the universe around us at all times and within us literally every day we die, when we go to sleep we are rebirth the next morning, right? And that's a beautiful thing. And so for right now, I am this.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's literally something that like Rob Bell talked about when we went to his presentation, like his
show.
Yeah,
we haven't even talked about that.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we haven't
talked about that at all.
Well, I want to get into more details about that later, but, like, he mentioned something along the lines of, like, every, 7 years, all the cells in your body have, in essence, replaced themselves, meaning that you do not have the same physical body that you did 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, are you therefore a different person, or are you a continuation of what you used to be? But the same can also be said about thoughts, about your identity, about your mind. It literally, everything will come and it will go.
Yep.
And and that's a beautiful like analogy and metaphor.
It's so freeing.
It is.
Yeah.
It's incredibly freeing.
To know that you don't have to be attached to the like, if you decide to put labels on yourself, those are peel-off stickers, baby. You can peel them off whenever you want.
Yeah. Yeah, which is like where I've been with the whole Christian thing, right? Yeah. Like, I guess if you break down my beliefs, you know, I think Jesus is a homie, whatever. Like, yeah, I guess I'm technically a Christian. But like, if I have to be in your little box of what a Christian means, like, no, I'm not. Labels are just labels. who gives a flying fuck? If it helps you, use it. If a label is helpful for you to be able to understand yourself, great. But if it's not, tear them off. Who cares? And so, final question. Bonathy.
That was painful.
I saw you physically cringe at that. I was like, oh.
So, Bonnie. All right. So, this is a The Angsty Christian Podcast. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck are you here?
Well, I am arguably Christian and not arguably angsty.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. That's a label we'll keep forever, baby.
You're arguably Christian, not arguably angsty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you a podcast?
Arguably.
You are arguably maybe a podcast. Maybe. Like Machine Gun Kelly. I am we.
I am
we. I am podcast.
We will, like, that's the thing. We are going to, like, ascend farther beyond podcast. We are now the Angsty Christian Experience.
We are now. No. We're going to go beyond that. We are now the Angsty Christian Thought Leaders.
We can't take thought. We'll come up with an alternate title.
I like Experience.
Yeah.
I like Experience.
The Angsty Christian Experience.
An angsty Christian experience. Yeah,
exactly. That fits. Yeah. And as far as my title goes, like, I personally like the title, like, Christian for myself, but mostly because, like, I like attaching the title to me because I know it will make people fucking pissed to know that I'm openly queer and I still have that Christian label on me. And that fuels me more than anything.
Which brings me to, and I have to pull up the tweet. Oh, there was a really good tweet. Kevin Garcia put it up. Kevin, y'all know, I quote Kevin so much. Kevin is such an awesome individual.
Kevin, I know you're not listening to this right now, but if you happen to be listening to this right now, come on the podcast, please.
Jake, I have their link to get them on the podcast. I'm just waiting for your schedule.
Oh, right. Mike. it's my fault, honestly.
We will have Kevin on. They DM'd me their schedule to get them on. But, sorry, it's taking a little while. They tweet a lot. Wow. Okay, you know what? I can't find it in their, like, mass of tweets where they are saying essentially, like, you know, they say a lot of things. But what they tweeted, I think it might have been yesterday. Maybe they took it down. I don't know. But they said, I am so tired, essentially. I'm going to butcher it. I'm so tired of people thinking that you can't be queer and religious. You can't be queer and Christian. You can't be queer and Muslim. You can't be queer and Buddhist. You can't be queer and Hindu. Like, where the fuck? No. That's a dualistic thinking, right? It's you're either queer or you're religious. Why can't you be both?
Yeah. That comes from both sides, too. Like, there are a lot of people in the LGBTQ+ community who would be upset.
Yeah, totally. They'd be like, how could you give into a system that does blah, 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 blah? Like, I had a girl recently ask me, like, because they didn't understand that I'm no longer a youth pastor. But they're like, how can you be part of a system that indoctrinates and blah, blah, blah? I'm like, first off, wrong. I'm not. But also, you don't know me. You don't know where I go. You don't know my story. You're also making the assumption that I can't make that choice for myself and be wise about that. Because here's the reality. Some of you who may be listening may be queer and going to a non-affirming church. And you may somehow find a home there. I can't judge that for you. I can say that if it was me, I wouldn't. If I weren't going to the church I was currently at, quite frankly, Jake and I were talking about today, I would have joined the Satanic Temple a long time ago. Easy. Why? Because they're accepting. And I could be probably a theistic Satanist, but except I wouldn't believe in Satan. I don't know. But because they're actually affirming and all that stuff, that's another discussion for another time. But point being is, like, if I did not find an affirming church, I wouldn't be going to church right now. If I didn't, like, that was literally the selling point for me, was the affirmation of queer folk. And so for you, if you're going to church and you're not affirmed, but maybe you're accepted, but you can't be a leader or whatever, and if you find a home there, cool. I can't make that judgment for you, but I'm going to ask, just like Kevin did, why are you going to a church that doesn't affirm who you are? That's not love.
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you wanted to add before we start going into our other bullshit segments?
I mean, just that I'm happy to be here. And I'm excited for conversations and dumbassery.
Yeah! I also want to say, I know it was really, like, queer focused this episode, because, like, I know for Daniel and I, we just very recently came out as what we are.
And are still coming out.
And are still coming out, too.
That never stops.
It never stops.
Yeah. Welcome to the party.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah, so, yeah, as us who just started coming out, it was very queer-focused, but I know that your identity is more than just you being queer, as much as literally everyone who is queer, their identity is more than just them being part of this beautiful, fucked up mess of a community that we all love so very much.
Yeah, I mean, it is a huge part, though, of, like, religious trauma, which is what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
That's where most of mine stems from, so. All
right. Woo! Love it.
You got right to the painful stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling that there will be a future episode where we'll deep dive into, like, more, like, the private school aspect, or, like, the Christian school, because I know...
That's you. She was homeschooled.
Yeah, I went to the private Christian school, but it was still, like,
similar.
It was a Christian homeschooling environment, right?
For the most part, definitely. Yeah.
So, I mean, there are aspects of that that we can definitely dive into and get, like, very into the dirt on all that bullshit.
So much.
So much to talk about.
Well... Let's move to our next segment, shall we?
Yeah! Yeah! If there's something strange in the Catholic Church, who are you gonna call? The police! This is the fucking news.
Nice.
I actually came up with a song this time.
That was good.
That was good.
That was good.
Yeah.
Well, today's news story, I mean, it's a week old. I think it came out like the day that our last episode came out. But if you haven't heard of this new craze called critical race theory, it's actually like a very important thing that you should check out. And I still need to do a lot of more reading on. But essentially it is one of the bases for being anti-racist, right? And the mainstream churches, a lot of those in power, have recently started seeing that critical race theory is bad. And they're not affirming of critical race theory, which stems in a lot of science and research and a lot of stuff like that, right? And Mark Driscoll, Daddy Driscoll, Daddy Marky, if you haven't listened to Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, that dude. And if you've been in the evangelical church, you've probably been influenced by him because he's a piece of shit. But he recently came out with a video that you can watch the whole video. I'm not going to force any of us to watch it. I watched most of it. He said that it's demonic. He said that it is an attack from Satan.
Jesus, wow.
That's like a thing about anti-racism and a thing that is saying that, you know, this isn't cool, like racism is stupid and bullshit and actually unethical, is satanic.
Yeah. That's... It's just fucked.
Yeah. No, it's dumb. It's actually a lot of bullshit. And it's been getting around. A lot of pastors have been more outspoken about it. And have been talking a lot more about it. And if you just Google critical race theory, this is what comes up. Critical race theory is a body of legal scholarship and an academic movement of U.S. civil rights scholars and activists who seek to critically examine the intersection of race and U.S. law and to challenge mainstream American liberal approaches to racial justice. So, like, one of the most, I'm not going to say that. But, it's just ironic and interesting that Mark Driscoll, who's arguably one of the most prominent voices in mainstream evangelicalism, is fighting something that is challenging mainstream American liberal or mainstream American law, power structures, dynamics.
I guess that was the fucking news.
Yeah, we're not going to go too long on that. We'll let you guys think about that. Because Bonnie has a... You had a recent interaction with Kenneth, right?
I did. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, I was a camp counselor at, like, a Christian summer camp. And I was packing. And I have playing cards and tarot cards. And they were both wrapped up in... bandanas so they didn't get lost, because there's nothing worse than having a deck of cards and then finding you only have three aces.
True.
Like that's the fucking worst. But I was in such a rush to pack because I am ADHD and I procrastinate. It's one of my special talents. that I accidentally brought the tarot cards as opposed to the playing cards.
No!
Yeah. Yeah, to a Christian summer camp.
Oh, no!
And somehow one of the campers went through my stuff and found the cards. And then the little snitch.
God damn it.
Kenneth was one of, like, the...
Counselors?
Counselors, yeah.
God damn it, Kenneth.
And yeah.
What did he say?
He told me to get rid of them.
Okay.
Because they are demonic. And Kenneth, which this is a little spicy, Kenneth has actually messed around with tarot.
What?
A little bit in his
what?
Yeah.
Kenneth.
And apparently, this comes straight from him. He was possessed. Using tarot cards, yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Kenneth, are you okay?
What's his demon's name?
I don't know. I don't think he thought it through that much.
I think his demon's name was Deez.
No. don't do it to him. Please. Please.
Oh, no. It was definitely Enma.
Enma what?
Enma Life Pulse.
Anyways. Okay.
Kenneth, bro.
Dude.
If you were possessed, please send us the demon's details. I would love to talk with your demons.
Yeah, exactly. If you can get us hooked up on LinkedIn with your demon, that'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, next segment, let's go into our petty prayers with Gabe Gonzalez.
I pray that your testicles swell to 3 times their normal size. Amen.
Amen, Gabe Man.
Oh, that was a good one.
All right, who do we have to thank for this episode?
You know what? This episode, it's going to come out of left field. We're thanking the entire Pokemon company.
Oh my God, they are coming out with a new Pokemon game. It's the Sinnoh remake in a month, and I'm so fucking stoked.
I know you are.
Every day on my Amazon show, and it is looking at me right now, it comes up and says, order has been placed. Arriving November 19th, Sinnoh remake, and I am... so fucking excited.
I'm happy for you.
I'm happy for you too.
Me too.
Yeah. I can name maybe 4 Pokemon, but I think they're really cute. So.
Pokemon.
I can name Pikachu, Bulbasaur, Squirtle,
Charizard?
Charizard's good, one good, of them. Good. I think one of them's Chad.
One of them's Eevee, right?
Eevee evolves into Chad.
Yeah. Oh, it evolves into Chad? Okay.
Yeah, Eevee evolves into Chad. Yeah.
And then from Chad it goes into Giga Chad. Wait.
Yes.
Then there's Mr. Mime, who's fucking Ash's mom, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Mime is fucking Ash's mom.
Ash's mom
has got it going on. Ash's saw. All right. Well, on that note,
I'm genuinely sorry,
yeah.
Mom. Oh my God.
Yeah, go out, be gay, do crime, and remember, it's not a phase.
It's not a phase.
All right, bye.
You did all right, bye again. You stinky. You
Jake
idiot.
Suck my ass disrespectfully.
You dumbass.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Angsty Christian Podcast. Please make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at the Angsty Christian Pod.
And if you really, really like our show and you want to support us, make sure to go over to our Patreon.
Thanks,
and,
Mom.
Yeah, thank you, Mom. And become one of our backers.
And if you would like to email us about literally anything, you hate us, you like us, you want to be with us, whatever, I don't care, email us at angstychristianpodcast@gmail.com. Also realize when I said that, it sounds like you want to be in a relationship with us. Well, 2 of us are single, but please don't. That's weird.
I'll hold your hand.
Anyways, all music is done by Brad Tsushima. He is a homie. Thank you so much, Brad. We love you.